You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, How to Turn Your Independent Film into a Money-Making Business by Alex Ferrari. For a free copy of the audiobook, head over to www.filmbizbook.com.
Welcome to the Director Series Podcast, a show dedicated to deconstructing the work of some of cinema's most celebrated and influential film directors. I'm your host, Cameron Bile.
Alien 3 proved to be a radical departure from the established conventions of the franchise, killing off the survivors of Aliens immediately and leaving Sigourney Weaver's Lieutenant Ripley broken and stranded on an industrial prison planet, nicknamed Fury by the all-male population of murderers, rapists, and religious zealots serving time there.
This is a maximum security prison, and you have no weapons of any kind?
We're on the honor system.
And we're fucked.
In her third performance as Ripley, Weaver yet again transforms the character via a radical evolution into a tough, resilient survivor. Her arc through the series is compelling, and for all the controversies over the film's storyline, Weaver deserves a lot of credit for never phoning it in when she very easily could have. Hers is the only familiar face in this hellish new world, save for the mutilated visage of Lance Henriksen's android, Bishop, and his flesh-and-blood counterpart that appears towards the end of the film.
Ripley.
Bishop.
I'm here to help you.
Among the fresh blood, so to speak, Charles S. Dutton, Charles Dance, and Pete Postlewaite stand out as the most compelling inmates on Fury 161.
The apocalypse is upon us. Let us be ready. Let your mercy be just.
Dutton plays Dylan, a tough, righteous voice of spiritual authority that the other inmates can rally behind.
Look, I'm on your side. I want to help, but I need to know what's going on.
Dance plays Clemens, the sensitive, intellectual medical officer who helps Ripley acclimate to this harsh world and harbors a dark secret of his own.
Lovely. Consider this, Mr. Clemens. How would you like me to explain your sordid history to your newfound friend? For her personal edification, of course.
The late, great character actor Postlewaite plays David, an observant prisoner with a high degree of intelligence. Fincher's collaborations with the director of photography Jeff Cronenwith in the music video realm led to Fincher hiring his father, the legendary Jordan Cronenwith, as Alien 3's cinematographer. Best known for his work on Ridley Scott's seminal masterpiece Blade Runner, Cronenwith the Elder was swiftly consumed by Parkinson's disease during production. The earliest of Alien 3's several considerable production woes, Cronenwith's condition deteriorated so quickly that cinematographer Alex Thompson had to step in and replace him only 2 weeks into the shoot. Despite this setback, Alien 3 is a visual stunner that firmly establishes Fincher's uncompromising style in the feature realm. Fincher's stark, grungy aesthetic translates well into the theatrical anamorphic aspect ratio format, with the smoky, industrial production design by Norman Reynolds giving Fincher plentiful opportunities to incorporate artful silhouettes and his signature cold, desaturated color palette. Only Fincher can make a palette that deals heavily in oranges and browns feel cold. Fincher's emphasis on architecture and world-building manifests in a subtle, surprising way. He chooses to shoot a great deal of the film in low-angle shots that look up at the characters and expose the ceiling. This creates an air of helplessness that pervades the film, like we're way over our heads and drowning in despair. While this hopeless mood ultimately might have contributed to the film's failure at the box office, it's an inspired way for Fincher to communicate a real, tangible world that draws us into it. Most sets are built without a ceiling, so a lighting grid can be easily installed overhead, but by showing the audience the existence of a ceiling, it subconsciously tells us we're in a place that exists in real life, and that the events of the film could very well happen to us. Well, maybe not quite.
Fuck!
This is the choice. You die sitting here on your ass, or you die out there. At least we take a shot. We owe it one. It's fucked us up. Maybe we can get even for the others.
Fincher and Thompson's camera work in Alien 3 is also worth noting. Fincher has always had a firm, visionary command of camera movement, and the considerable resources of studio backing allows him to indulge in sweeping, virtuoso moves that bring a fresh, terrifying energy to the film.
Come on!
Particular highlight is the tunnel sequence towards the end of the film, where the xenomorph chases the inmates through a huge, twisting labyrinth. Fincher uses a steadicam that assumes the POV of the xenomorph as it rages through the tunnels, twisting and spinning at seemingly impossible angles to communicate the alien's terrifying agility and speed.
This thing is really pissed off!
The industrial, foreboding nature of Fincher's visuals are echoed in composer Elliot Goldenthal's atmospheric score. Instead of using traditional symphonic arrangements, Goldenthal blurs the line between music and sound effects by incorporating non-instruments and electronic machinations into an atonal blend of sounds. In many ways, this approach proves to be even scarier than anything a conventional orchestra could conjure up. To reflect the medieval, religious nature of Fiore 161's inhabitants, Goldenthal also adapts haunting choral requiems that weave themselves into a tapestry of ominous sounds and tones.
That's fine. Yeah, that's better. You shoot 1,000 takes of it, there's bound to be one that's good, right? See it again? I'd buy it. This blood's the wrong color.
Alien 3's infamous production disasters are well documented, hopefully as a means to ensure that the film industry as a collective learns from the production's mistakes. These woes began during the earliest stages of pre-production, which saw the hiring and resigning of director Rennie Harlan before Vincent Ward came aboard for a short period to realize his vision of a wooden cathedral planet populated by apocalyptic monks. While a semblance of this conceit remains in the finished film, the script was changed radically several times before cameras started rolling, and even then, the filmmakers didn't have a finished version to work from. The ramifications of this were numerous, from actors growing frustrated with constantly changing character arcs and confusing plot inconsistencies. Several million dollars were wasted on sets that were built and never used. The process was particularly hard on Fincher, who was constantly fighting a losing battle against incessant studio meddling that overruled his decisions and undermined his authority.
Action!
Got it?
One more. It was a little bit too fast.
Fed up with the lack of respect his vision was being given, the young director barely hung on long enough to wrap production and walked off entirely when it came time to edit. The fact that he ever decided to make another feature film again after that ordeal is something of a miracle. Despite constant challenges to his control of the film, Fincher's hand is readily apparent in every frame. A science fiction film such as this is heavily reliant on special effects, a challenge that Fincher's background at ILM makes him well suited for. Computer-generated imagery was still in its infancy in 1992, so Fincher and company had to pull off Alien 3's steampunk vision of hell through a considered mix of miniatures, puppets, animatics, and matte paintings. Some of the earliest CGI in film history can be glimpsed in the scene where the skull of the hot lead-covered xenomorph cracks under the sudden onset of cold water before exploding. Fincher's fascination with technology plays well into the Alien universe, where the complete absence of technology, and for that matter, weapons, is used as a compelling plot device to generate suspense and amplify the hopelessness of the character's scenario. In order to vanquish the monster, they ultimately have to resort to the oldest form of technology known to mankind. Fire. Alien 3 fared decently at the box office, mostly due to franchise recognition and the considerable fan base built up by the film's two predecessors, but it was mercilessly savaged by the critics. Long considered the worst entry in the series until Alien Resurrection gave it a run for its money, Alien 3 has become something of a cult classic as Fincher's profile has risen. Fans forgave the film of its transgressions because they knew Fincher's vision had been hijacked and tampered with. They knew that somewhere out there, in the countless reels of film that were shot, Fincher's original vision was waiting to be given shape. In 2003, Fox attempted to make amends by creating a new edit of the film, dubbed The Assembly Cut. Fincher understandably refused to participate in the re-edit, so Fox had to go off the auteur's original notes in restoring his vision. The 2003 assembly cut differs markedly from the 1992 original, restoring entire character arcs and adding a good 50 minutes worth of footage back into the story. There's several key changes in this new cut, like Ripley being discovered on the beach instead of her escape pod, the xenomorph bursting out of an ox and not a dog, and the removal of the newborn alien queen bursting out of Ripley's chest as she falls to her death. The end result is a much better version of the film, giving us greater insight to the characters and their actions. While it doesn't quite make up for the studio's stunning lack of respect for Fincher during the making of the film, it ultimately proved that their concerns about a young, untested director were completely unfounded and were the film's ultimate undoing.
Dusk and a blue sky. You can't paint the sky right along there.
Okay.
Ezra?
Gotcha.
We're cool on the concept now. We're all hip to this. You saw it right here.
Dusk and a blue sky.
Ezra just
we'll shoot
said,
it anyway.
If it's a blue sky, we don't have to shoot. Right, Ezra? Hi, Joe.
Yeah.
The experience of making Alien 3 would be enough for any director to quit filmmaking forever. But thankfully, this wasn't the end for Fincher.
Thank you for listening to the Director Series. For a deeper dive into your favorite filmmakers, go to www.directorseries.net.
The Director Series is made possible in large part by our generous supporters on Patreon. Please visit us at patreon.com/directorseries to see how your contribution enables the continued production of video essays and text articles on your favorite contemporary and classic film directors. Thank you.